And so here we are, worldwide live through BBS Radio online. Thank you, BBS, for making it possible. I welcome all those on the show here online. We can't see you, we can't hear you, but we are glad you're here. This is, as usual, a simulcast with a conference call. And at this point, we have a few people here on the line. Every time you hear a ding, that's somebody else joining in. We're still 4 minutes away from the hour. Tonight's call is going to be exciting. It is regarding rewriting the Old Testament. We've had a channeling on that in the past as well, and it is quite interesting. So I wonder what's going to come up tonight. Good evening and welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location.
Percy, North Carolina.
Good evening, Percy. Welcome to the call. How are you doing?
Fine.
All right. Thank you for being here. Welcome to the next caller. Please say your name and location.
Hi, it's Jane in Philadelphia.
Hi, Jane. Welcome to the call. How are you doing?
Thank you. Okay.
All right. So we need to send Donna some warmth. She's in Montana and is in minus 20 degrees.
Oh, my. Bundle up.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right, Donna. You sound warm anyway, so that's a good thing.
Oh, well, thank you. I've got dinner baking in the oven. That helps.
All right.
Well, I look forward to listening to this evening. It sounds very interesting.
Yes, yes.
For myself, I always had a hard time believing a lot of things in the Bible. It just never really resonated with me.
You know, I was also brought up in a Christian family, and I, from just a little child, it just didn't make any sense. I immediately pushed it away. I never believed in it. And two people joining in at the same time. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Maryland, Pennsylvania.
Maryland, welcome to the call.
Thank you. Hi.
All right. Thank you for being here. Who else joined in?
This is Don in Northern Ohio. Hi, everybody.
Good evening, Don, and welcome. How are you doing?
Good. How's it going?
All right, man. Thank you for being here.
Yep.
Somebody else joined in. Welcome. Please say your name and location.
This is Brian in Ventura. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Welcome to the call. Good evening.
Thank you.
All right. And for those who are joining in online through BBS Radio, thank you for being here. We welcome you. We're still 1 minute away from the hour. Wynn will be here shortly. We have a bunch of people on the phone line. And this is a simulcast. And tonight's show will be interesting. This is a channeling about the Old Testament. Good evening. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
This is Terry.
Terry Brown, my beloved sister. How are you doing, Terry?
Hi, I'm doing great.
All right. Thank you so much for being here again, Terry.
Thank you. And Wynn should be here any minute.
All right.
Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Hi, Terry.
Hello.
Have you seen the email, Terry, about tonight's call?
No, I didn't.
All right.
Is it me?
I'm not going to spoil it.
Tell me.
what it says is that we will do some channeling, I guess, and discuss about the Old Testament from one of the most famous books.
Oh,
one of the most,
Bible.
The most.
That's
the Bible.
The Bible. Yeah.
So there's been like, I think, like a couple of years ago already, right? That we did one conference call that we paid attention to the Old Testament.
Yeah. I don't remember, but we've been, Michael Tollinger has been researching it.
Okay.
From his travels and his work with excavations in South Africa, because that's where the gold miners were.
That's where Solomon's mine was, didn't he say that? Down in South Africa somewhere.
I welcome the caller who just came in. Welcome. Thanks for being here. Please say your name and location.
This is Roger in Austin.
Roger, good evening to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
All right. I welcome the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
This is Marilyn in Flagstaff.
Hello, Marilyn. Welcome to the call. How are you doing?
Hi, Marilyn.
Thank you. Hi.
Right.
I'm doing great.
All right. Great. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Hey, it is Wynn.
Wynn, may I guess your last name, Winfrey?
Yep. Roger, good evening to you. How are you doing?
All right.
This is a good evening.
That is BBS through somebody's line, I guess.
Okay.
Welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location. If you want to, we welcome you. All right, then. I'm glad you're here. Terry is here.
You know,
the email was received early today.
You know what? It's interesting. People, this is such a hot topic. It's unbelievable. And it's like a paradigm buster, guys.
What's that?
It really is.
Yeah, I was.
Buster.
Yes, I was just muting the, turning the stones off, so I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah.
Yes, great. I'm excited about it, and
I don't know if you want to be excited. It's kind of like it destroys like the greatest myth in on the planet, and. Hang on a second. Terry, are you muted?
No, I'm not.
Well, it's nice to hear you.
All callers are muted.
All right. So I shouldn't say I'm excited, but I'm very interested.
Heise has been teasing me. He's not going to tell me what the email said.
Oh, my email?
Yeah.
Oh, Terry doesn't know. That's right.
And now she does.
Well, we were just going to have an hour of channeling.
Oh, no.
And they could tell us whatever they wanted to say. Okay.
Oh no! They're they like questions.
They like questions. You know, I know that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. That's not what the email said. Okay.
Okay.
Just relax. Okay.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but obviously, they know.
You want to record me?
Yeah, I guess we should. Okay, what's the date? It is 11:10.
Yes. Ready?
Okay, yep.
This conference is being recorded.
This is November 10th. See, I'm getting it right. 2014. This is Wynn and Terry in Sedona. And all of you everywhere. And thank you for being here. If you read our email announcement, this is going to be a really interesting call, I think. I find it interesting. You know, there's information that comes to me that just blows my mind, and it doesn't always come from channeling. In fact, oftentimes, if you've noticed the pattern, they don't like, even though they know all kinds of stuff, they don't like to just say, here's the way it is. And the way the pattern has been is if I do a bunch of research on something, then I can ask them, and they will add something to it, or they'll validate it. But they wouldn't come up with the stuff out of the blue because of this propensity for us to give up our power, and that all of us have done it, including me, many times, in this life, many lifetimes. And we are programmed to give up our power. And programming is so huge that it's like we just take it for granted until you get it in your face. And even some of you, even when you get the stuff in your face, you still don't want to let it go. And it's like, you just say, how can that be wrong? Well, you know, we did a series on rewriting the Old Testament. And if you go back to it, you will see just to overview it, I'll give you the overview of it.
This was quite some time ago, Wynn, right? Do you recall?
Right. It was about a year ago, I think, okay?
Okay.
And basically, we have an idea of God, you know, the Judeo-Christian God, and even all religions have this idea of God, however they project it, and that there's some good guy in the sky that's overlooking us all, and that there's sin, if you're bad, you go to hell, you know, all that stuff. And I had a lot of indication from a lot of stuff that I was researching that, and now I'm going to say things, and I'm not going to try to back everything up because we'll go for a 3 or 4 hour workshop. But I'll tell you, if you want to do the backup, I'll tell you where to go and what to look for, because your mind is not going to want to believe this, probably. But what I'm going to say right now is based on the oldest recorded history of anything is in Sumeria. There was the oldest civilization was Sumeria. And this civilization, really, no one knows where it came from, but they had art, they were quite remarkably advanced. But it was a mystery, how did they get so advanced? And they left a lot of clay tablets with a lot of records, and even clay tablets with poetry. They were writing poetry and recording it on these clay tablets. And there was a gentleman by the name of Zachariah Sitchin that translated these gold tablets. And what I'm going to say is partially based on this translation. Now, one of the things that's very cool about this, say, as opposed to things that were written and changed, nobody has the original documents for the Bible, right? And so we know that the Bible has been revised probably more than once, but major revision by something called the Council of Nicaea, 300 years after Jesus, that was totally going through the Bible. And in some people say they were taking out a lot of stuff and trying to turn it into a huge control mechanism. But in any case, the clay tablets could not be edited, and Zachariah Sitchin may not have been accurate, but other people have looked at it, and they've come up with the same thing. And the clay tablets told the story of spaceships landing, and there was an E.T. race called the Anunnaki that wanted to mine gold here, and that they made hybrids of humans in order to be their slaves to do the mining of the gold. I say hybrids of humans, I mean hybrids of them and apes. Hybrids of them and apes, which became the first humans. And that the humans then, originally they were designed so they couldn't breed. They couldn't have sex. And then the chief genetic designer changed the formula so they could have sex. And there were two brothers that went into great conflict about this, because one did not want, there was a planetary code. Like if you watch Star Trek, you know, the non-intervention code. So you weren't supposed to go on a planet and change the natural evolution of a planet. You should go and you could do whatever you wanted, but you'd leave and things would still be the same. So when they bred the humans originally, they were not going to be able to have sex and they couldn't reproduce. And then one brother wanted them to reproduce. Apparently, there were a lot of other issues, like there was a group of women and they had to gestate them in these women, and the women were complaining. We have these strange beings that we're having to give birth to. So they were allowed to reproduce, but the one brother, the two brothers became enemies. And in what I talked about in the rewriting the Old Testament, I made the hypothesis that the gods of the Old Testament were not really gods as we think of God. They were these Anunnakis who were taking, they were trying to control all these humans that were just, their population was exploding, and the humans were not easily controlled. And so they were, at least one of them, the one that really didn't want them at all, was really kind of brutal with the humans. And he just said, let's get rid of them. And he created the deluge that, you know, supposedly destroyed life in the Old Testament. And then there was Noah, and the other one wanted to actually evolve the humans. And he was communicating to Noah, and maybe it was a spaceship. Maybe it was an ark. I don't know. I think it was a spaceship where either they took, you know, samples of all the life and or they took actual beings in order to reseed the planet after this deluge. And then the evil, I won't call them evil, but the other brother, Enlil, the two brothers were named Enki and Enlil. The other brother was still trying to get rid of humans, still trying to control them. And so things like Sodom and Gomorrah were a nuclear blast. And that was to scare the S out of the humans so they'd be totally obedient. And so in the Old Testament, there's all these different names of God, maybe more than I'm going to say, but I can recall. There is Yahweh. There is Jehovah. There is Adonai. Now, I remember sitting through a lecture of Greg Braden, where he said he found Yahweh's name in the DNA, coded in the DNA. And I don't know if he knew all this stuff about Enki and Enlil, but he was studying DNA and found that. Well, in any case, so there's the whole story of Zechariah Sitchin and Sumeria, which goes through in quite a bit of detail. And he's got a number of books out on this. He's been on George Dory, and he's pretty well reputed. And then more recently, there's a gentleman by the name of Michael Challenger. And Michael Challenger is South African. And he discovered in South Africa the gold mines. Remember, the theory is that an ET race landed and was hybrid humans and were looking for getting help in mining gold. And Michael Challenger believes he found the gold mines and he found the landing pads for the spaceships in South Africa. And he you know, Terry and I went to see him twice. He was giving a talk in Sedona, and we had breakfast with him and his wife. And I added something to the mix here, okay? And that is that the Rock Root is one of the good guys in the higher realms. And according to Carla Rucker, many people who have studied this word, Maldek, has come up a number of times from different people, and it was the name of a planet that blew up and ended up being the asteroids. And, you know, no one knows what happened to the population of that planet except the Ra group. And the Ra group happened to tell Carla Rucker in her early Ra channelings. And they said they moved the souls from Maldek to Earth into bodies that were Neanderthal man. And it sounds like they had created a hybrid. They didn't talk about the Anunnaki creating the hybrid. But when I asked the question in one of our sessions, they said I had it right. They moved the Maldekian souls. And if you die in a nuclear blast, it is supposedly the worst way to die. Because what happens is it's a multidimensional explosion. So it doesn't just do away with your body. It fragments your soul. And all these Maldekians were kind of the way it was expressed in the Rod Room. They were tangled up in a tangled knot of fear. And they didn't even know they existed. They lost their self awareness, and they were just a glom of energy. And so the Ra group made an attempt to individuate them, and that they were, these souls ended up occupying the bodies that the Anunnaki were creating. And I guess, as I would guess, that as the humans proliferated, then there were just way, there were a lot of non-Deccan souls. There was an entire planet full of souls. And as the humans proliferated, the non-Deccan souls would occupy the bodies to continue the evolution. And evolution, as I come here, is for us to learn how to co-create with the universe and for us to activate our DNA, that there's these strands of DNA and that if you can activate them, each one is like connected to the hologram of the universe. And the human template has the same potential in their DNA activation as the Anunnaki. But when people have their DNA activated at higher levels, they lose their ability to be controlled. And so if you want to control a group of people or a race, you will do your best to set up circumstances so their DNA doesn't activate. So the way the story goes on DNA is there's 12 strands of DNA, and the first seven relate to the first seven chakras. And the eighth and above, the eighth to the 12th, move into holograms higher than your body. And so the first seven chakras, when you open a chakra, that chakra opens a strand of DNA. So if someone wants to control you, they make it very difficult to open up chakras. They create fear. They create control. They create ways that keep a person blocked, because the one with the higher DNA activation will usually control the one with the lower DNA activation. So if a human really grew, their DNA would grow to the point where they could not be controlled anymore, that they were, everyone is their own person. And so there's quite a compelling case for that. And when Terry and I saw Michael Tellinger the last time he was in Sedona, Terry had bought his book. And so sitting around the house, and I picked it up a couple of months ago. And, you know, because people always think, including me, that when you hear somebody one time, you think, well, you know everything they're saying. So for example, if somebody hears one of our calls, they think that's all that is. And that is all that is, isn't it? But they don't know there's so much expansiveness and so many things we cover. And then we have our Sunday calls where we have these amazing energies. Some people don't know that. So somebody is listening to this call, and this is only one little call of so many amazing things we've covered. This is not all it is, but this is this call all it is. So the thing that really, really got me on Michael Tellinger's book, Slave Species of the Gods, is his going through the Old Testament, okay, and looking at who the God of the Old Testament really was based on the Old Testament, I mean, based on what it actually said. And he took all these quotes from the Old Testament, which I thought I wanted to share with you, because this the idea we have of God, almost in totality, is based on the Old Testament. And that is based on a bunch of space people that created genetically engineered humans. And we could start off with man is created in the image of God because we look like the creators of us. But they weren't God. They were just a bunch of space people. So Michael did some questions, and then he answered them from the Bible, okay? Let's see here. How many men did... I'm just curious. I think I'm just going to ask a question to the group, okay? And hang on.
All callers are unmuted.
How many of you have read the Old Testament?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
I read some of it.
Okay. Some of it. How many of you at one point in your life had the idea of this traditional idea of God, that there's a consciousness out there that we're supposed to please or we have to be good for or all of that? How many of you had that idea?
Me.
Yeah. Okay.
I was never really sure.
Oh, fear.
I always knew there was a creator.
The creator, yeah. Did I hear Justin in there?
John.
There's Donna.
I guess I'm in here. Donna. Is that Donna in Kingman?
No, it's Donna in Great Falls, Montana.
Oh, okay. Hi, Donna.
Hi.
Well, in any case, you know, there's a lot of people that get...
All callers are muted.
You know, and it's amazing how many tie-ins there are in our work, and each of our little tie-ins is like a major epic in of itself. I mean, tie-in number one, we're talking to the Elohim who say they created the universe. Tie-in number two, we have Terry Brown, who is almost certainly St. Catherine. And who was St. Catherine? She was channeling, my take on this, she was channeling Ra, and that the Ra group, who was this group soul of graduates, hundreds of millions of them, was attempting to make their contribution to the evolution of humans in the middle of all this Anunnaki control mechanism, and that Jesus was a manifestation, a co-creation from the person named Jesus and the Ra group. And that Jesus, to a great degree, said the right things. I said things that were true that would evolve someone's DNA. Okay? That, we don't just sit here and get exalted. We do things. We do things that we care about people. We genuinely care. And when you genuinely care, even when you make mistakes, even when you get screwed, even when people take advantage of you, when you genuinely care, there's something that happens on an alchemical level that other people feel. And it's hard to explain, but it's real. And why is caring important? Well, it's not important because it pleases God. That would be, you know, do this and do that to please God. It's important because it's the quality that causes causes your chakras to open. It's the quality that causes your DNA to open strings. And so it becomes the quality that causes you to evolve and to grow and to master this realm. And it's not believing in something out of yourself and getting that being's approval that makes you grow. You know, this is the old paradigm that please God, do God's will. It's, you know, it's like, to me, those things are the reiteration of the wrong idea about God. I shouldn't say wrong idea. I mean, you know, it's like you can use the traditional word and you can bring in high sources. You might bring in the one infinite creator, depending on your intent. Even though the word has a lot of compromises to it, your intent can move the energy and cause miraculous things to happen. So what I want to do is I want to read some stuff from Michael Tellinger's book, okay? And this is all answered directly from the Bible. Okay, let's see here. How many men did God kill because someone decided to peek into the ark of the Lord? Correct answer. And 50,070. And he smote, and this is the quote from the Bible, Samuel 6:19. And he smote the men of Beth Shemesh because they had looked into the ark of the Lord. Even he smote of the people 50,310 men. And the people lamented because the Lord had smitten many of the people with a great slaughter. Here's another one. How many men did Moses kill in one day because they failed to say they supported God? Correct answer, 3,000. And here's the quote from Exodus, and he gives the number, you know, the line in Exodus. Then Moses stood at the gate of the camp and said, "Who is on the Lord's side? Let him come unto me." And all of the sons of Levi gathered themselves together unto him. And he said unto them, "Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, put every man his sword by his side, and go in and out from gate to gate through the camp, and slay every man his brother, and every man his companion, and every man his neighbor." And the children of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and fell of the people that day about 3,000 men. Okay? How many animals did Solomon kill in a sacrifice to please the Lord? Correct answer, 120,000 sheep and 22,000 oxen. And Solomon offered a sacrifice of peace offering, which he offered unto the Lord, 22,000 oxen and 120,000 sheep. So the king and all the children of Israel dedicated the house of the Lord. And that was from Kings, okay? And he says 863, okay? Now this whole little section is, how many people did God kill? How many Ethiopians did God kill for his chosen people? And the answer is 1,000,000. And Asa had an army of men, and there came out against them Zerah, the Ethiopian, with a host of 100,000. Asa cried unto the Lord his God and said, "Lord, it is nothing with thee to help, whether many or with them that have no power. Help us, our Lord. So the Lord smote the Ethiopians. Okay? Now, by the time God gets through with his killing spree, how many dead will there be? Answer, enough to cover the surface of the earth. And the slain, this is from Jeremiah 25:33. And the slain of the Lord shall be at that day from one end of the earth even unto the other end of the earth, and they shall not be lamented, neither gathered nor buried. They shall be dung upon the ground. Jeremiah. Okay. Now, let's look at here. How many people... Wait a second. How many people did God kill in one day for having premarital sex? Correct answer. 23,000. I mean, this is like... right from the Bible. Never let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 3,000. What is that? In one day, 3,000. That's from Corinthians 10:8. After God brought the Israelites out of Egypt, how many of their own people did they kill at God's behest for declining to give God his due? Correct answer. 3,000 spouses and siblings in one day. And quote, then Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, who is on the Lord's side? Let him come in to me, unto me. And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together unto him. And he said unto them, thus saith the Lord of God of their... Oh, wait, I read this one. Michael has this one in here. Twice. And then, I mean, it goes on and on. How many Israelites did God slaughter in a plague for whoring around? 24,000. How many people did God kill in Sodom and Gomorrah for engaging in homosexual acts? Every little single living thing in the communities. Now we go into God's favorite ways to kill. Okay? What are God's methods of punishing those who break his commandments? And actually, Michael gives a choice. And he says it's all of the above. He strikes them with plague, burning fevers that consume the eyes, pestilence, consumption, blasting the sword, and even mildew. He strikes them with hemorrhoids, scabs, itching, madness, and blindness. He sends wild bears to devour their children. Any of the above, depending on his mood. And then he quotes from the Bible here, from different sections, but if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments, I also will do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, and the burning agu that shall consume the eyes. I will send wild beasts among you, which shall rob you of your children and destroy your cattle. That's from Leviticus. And if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Lord of the God to observe to do all his commandments, the Lord will smite thee with its consumption and with a fever and with an inflammation and with an extreme burning and with the sword and with blasting and the mildew, and they shall pursue thee until they perish. The Lord will smite thee with the botch of Egypt and the emrods and with the scab and with the itch whereof thou canst not be healed. the Lord shall smite thee with madness and blindness and astonishment of heart. Astonishment of heart. Deuteronomy. And then, of course, I mean, the Old Testament is filled with this. Now, you can imagine, if you're trying to control people with fear, what a good way to do it. And then back up your pledge by doing it, you know, by bombing them, nuking them, and having this idea of God, of a jealous God. I mean, it's like, where's the free will? Where's the free will, which is what our sources say is so important, when someone says, if you don't do what I say, you're dead. If you don't believe in me, you're dead. I mean, it's a little funny. When you actually take it out of context and look at it, how does God kill whiners? Okay. How does God kill whiners? And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, and the Lord heard it, and his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burnt among them and consumed them, that they were in the uttermost parts of the camp. How does God prefer to torture someone who becomes enemy of his chosen people? How does God express his hatred towards people living in metropolitan Babylon? By turning the men, let's read this, by turning the men into drag queens, how has Babylon become a desolation among the nations? This is from Jeremiah. A sword is upon their horses and upon their chariots and upon all the mingled people that are in the midst of her, and they shall become as women, and sword is upon her treasures, and they shall be robbed. And let's see. In Jesus' time, how did the Trinity deal with non-believers? Uh-oh, how curious is on the line. And immediately, the angel of the Lord smote him, because he gave not God the glory, and he was eaten of worms, and gave up the ghost. But Elymas, the sorcerer, withstood them, seeking to turn away the deputy from the faith. And now he has another section called God's License to Sin, okay? Murder is a sin unless your victim is. If a man also lies with mankind as he lieth with a woman, they shall be put to death, i.e., if you were gay, you're dead. That's from Leviticus. One of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman. And when Phinehas saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and took a javelin in his hand and thrust both of them through the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. So the plague was stayed from the people of Israel. He slew all the house of Baasha, and he left him not one that pisseth against the wall, neither of his kinfolk nor of his friends. Thus did Zimri destroy all the house of Baasha, according to the word of the Lord. Well, does this really sound like God? Here's a good one. Cannibalism is a sin unless you eat your children, infants, friends, and self, when God destroys everything else, so those are all that are left to eat. And so this is the quote here he has a couple of quotes from Jeremiah. And I will cause them to eat the flesh of their sons and the flesh of their daughters, and they shall eat every one the flesh of his friend in the siege and straitness. And towards her young one, it cometh out from between her feet, and towards her children, which she shall hear, for she shall eat them for one of all things secretly in the siege and the straitness. Deuteronomy. Through the wrath of the Lord of hosts is the land darkened, and the people shall be in the as the fuel of the fire. No man shall spare his brother, and he shall snatch on the right hand and be hungry, and he shall eat the left hand, and they shall not be satisfied, that they shall eat every man the flesh of his own arm. Well, again, pretty interesting. You know, I never knew this stuff was in the Bible. Homosexuality is a sin unless you're one of God's favorite children and you have many wives in addition to your boyfriend. Now, that was Michael's paraphrase. The way it says it in the Bible, thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is an abomination, from Leviticus. David said, I'm distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. Samuel. And as soon as the lad was gone, David arose out of a place towards the south and fell on his face to the ground and buried himself three times, and they kissed one another and wept with one another until David exceeded. I'm not sure what that means, Samuel. And David had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart, kings. Thus cause God gave them unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, turned in their lusts one towards another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving themselves that recompense of their error, which was meet. Romans. Now, I'm losing some of that myself. I have to read it slowly just to make sure I'm getting it right. And in any case, here's where he was quoting some stuff on the Tower of Babel. Now, keep in mind, just think, if you have a bunch of Anunnaki ETs who are trying to control humans, and this is how they're doing it. And they're making good on their word. They're killing people. They're scaring the hell out of them. The Tower of Babel. Now, the whole world has one language and a common speech. As men moved eastward, they found a plain in Shinar and settled there. They said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They used brick instead of stone and tar for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower that the men were building. The Lord said, if there's one people speaking the same language, they have begun to do this, then nothing they plan to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language so they will not understand each other. So the Lord scattered them all over the earth, and they stopped building the city. This is why it was called Babel, because the Lord confused the language of the whole world. And from there, the Lord scattered them over the face of the earth. Michael Dillinger's comment, the entire passage smacks of a master-slave relationship. This is virtually a copy of the Sumerian tablets, where the gods were also very unhappy. The slaves were making rapid progress, gaining knowledge and showing signs of higher intelligence. It's fairly plain to read between the lines that God the Master panicked and took the necessary steps to prevent people from gaining skills and knowledge. The principle of divide and conquer was implemented very successfully among the emerging human threat. The simple fact that the sons of God were having children with the daughters of man was a huge problem. The new human offspring were even more intelligent than their human mothers because they had more of the gods' DNA, which allowed them to achieve more and evolve quicker. Well, it is so congruent with this idea of how it actually works. Let me see. Here's another one. Genesis 6:4 to 6:18. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God went to the daughters of men and had children by them. This was in Genesis. They were the heroes of old, men of renown. The Lord saw how great men's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made men on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind, whom I have created, from the face of the earth. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. This is the account of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and he walked with God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people on earth had corrupted their ways. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with evil and violence because of them. I am surely going to destroy both them and the earth. I am going to bring floodwaters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens. Everything on earth will perish, but I will establish my covenant with you. Well, there's a wonderfully, this is Michael's comment, there's a wonderfully ironic example of favoritism by an all-loving God who made all people equal. Suddenly Noah was his favorite son and the only kosher guy on the face of the earth. This is a little too much for me. There must have been some other motive, and the motive I placed before you makes more sense than any others I've read. That is especially in light of the inconsistency in the story when viewed from the two brother gods' point of view. The two brother gods' point of view, which presents us with a juicy bit of circumstantial evidence as to what exactly may have happened. We have two distinct personalities in Enlil and Enki with opposing views on the slave species. Enki wanted to save men. Therefore, he warned Noah, who also happened to be his earthling son. But he warned more than just Noah. Therefore, the biblical entry, which proclaims Noah to be the only righteous man on earth, makes no sense. This is where it gets really interesting, because it feeds us, if this part of the biblical story was written only after the event of the flood, from the perspective of Enlil, who suddenly realized he had failed in his quest to wipe out the human race. This failure to dispose us of the troublesome human population forced Enlil to alter his entire story, hiding the facts that he had failed. And it feels like a lot of sour grapes to me. And the entries in the Bible were written so as to hide the fact that God has failed in destroying the violent, evil humans. But instead, he found one righteous man among them to take pity on. Well,
656.
Oh, we're moving on. Okay, I don't know if you guys found that interesting, but it's like incredibly, our whole idea of God was built on the Old Testament, and here we have finally Jesus coming in and having a whole different approach than the Old Testament. The God of love, of compassion, of love your brother as yourself. This was the raw law of one. And thank you all for listening. I hope that was interesting. And the book that I was quoting from, he goes on to talk about not only the Old Testament, he talks about Hindu, he talks about all the religions. As far as I can tell, or most of them were based on some way, shape, or another, the Anunnaki trying to control our planet. And if you look today, the same forces are at work. And bless you all. We'll see you Wednesday. And thank you for listening.